it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into Primetime, hour number three. Buck here, Suk there, Schultzy right over there. As we get closer to a sports equinox here, there's everything's converging now. We got Thursday Night Football kicking off in about 10 minutes. You've got the Cubbies who are trying real hard to blow this 3-0 lead they had. Right now, 2-1, 1-away. The winning run is at the plate, tying run at first base for the Padres as the Cubs try to close out this elimination game.
Top of the ninth. Dude,
Mike,
I love.
We're going to need your microphone on if you want people to hear you.
I love high-pressure baseball situations.
Yep. Look, everybody's on their feet, every pitch.
Top of nine. Like, and you see the people, all the nervous energy bouncing around. And yes, the Cubs are actively trying to lose this game, which is exciting.
Damn it. I got to bet on the Cubbies, too.
Don't give it up!
Wait, are you ahead of us, Schultzy? Did something bad happen already?
No. Okay, I got $30 riding on this damn thing. I'm emotional.
It is weird because we have three separate TVs in here. And
because of streaming stuff, they all get on different lags and buffers.
I do this a lot because I like the little box that I have at home that I watch, my little streaming box that I have, it tends to be a little bit behind the main broadcast. I would say by go 30 seconds to 45 seconds. So a lot of times if I'm following along on Twitter, and sometimes I'll do that, like I'll tweet during Duck games or whatever. Sometimes it's fun to kind of scroll through. I will see in real, like someone will be like, oh my God. And I'm like, damn it.
You're
what?
Like, wait a second.
Or yeah. My buddy will text me something like in the middle of a Mets game. And I'm like, oh, what happened? And it's kind of weird. Cause they're like, all right, you know, something is it good? Is it bad?
Mm-hmm.
And it's always weird now when you're not, everyone is synced up.
Yeah. My group of buddies who are Ducks fans, like we all have different services. We're all on the same thread, but things are coming in at slightly different times. And if you're on the group thread, stuff could start blowing up if your feed has buffered for 30 seconds and you're like, oh boy, something's about to happen and I don't know what it is. Much better to go dark in those situations if you can.
Yes. If I know there's a lag and there almost always is at my house and it's a high leverage moment, I tend to just
shut everything else out.
I shut the phone down. And even if I hear it buzz, I'm like, you know what? I'll reconvene here in a minute. I don't like that. And it even happens in here sometimes. Like, because Rob's TV sometimes will be slightly ahead of mine, and yep. I'll hear him react. I'm like, damn it, knock yep. it off!
Well, just the other day, we were doing a show, and it was when Chapman had, like, loaded the bases in the ninth, and,
yeah.
and you were like, they're going to the ninth, we'll see if they can mount a comeback. And I'm like, they've already got the comeback happening. It's happening right now. And then you sped yours up, and then I was behind for when the guy finally got out of it.
Yeah, it's a little maddening.
My dad's, like, 10 seconds ahead of me down in Salem, so he'll call me during a Mariners game. He'll be like, they suck. I'll be like, Dad, I didn't see him strike out yet, damn it!
Wait for me to know that they suck too.
I don't want to tell him not to call. Like, I want to hear from him. It's just, it sucks, but it is what it is.
All right, week five in the NFL, kicking off with the little Niners. Oh, wait, I thought that was off the bat. A lot deeper than it was.
Nope, it is.
Oh, you got the
ball game.
You pulled the announcer.
I sure did.
There. Oh, swinging a high fly
ball. You got
ball.
Dave Niehaus.
Well,
right
whoever,
there.
The other thing too is whoever the hitter was on that, he kind of stood and looked at it like he got it. He did not.
No.
That's going to be a Cubbies 3-1 win. They will advance to play the Milwaukee Brewers.
Dave Niehaus was master. Of
oh
the
God.
The deep fly ball that is caught by the shortstop.
Swing at a high fly ball, he's on the warning track.
Dude, not even warning track.
That's true.
Dude, there was a time where he did it. That's like was the running joke as we were in here doing a show after we had lost the Mariners, and he had one of those, and dude, the shortstop caught it. Like, you can't.
That's bad.
You can't have a deep fly ball that the shortstop catches. And granted, it was one of those the shortstop was playing. He was playing pretty deep, almost like a softball rover. You can't have the shortstop catch a ball and do a, it's deep and caught.
So we were talking about Oregon maybe being QBU, or not QBU, but just having the unique opportunity to potentially have four of their alums starting in the NFL. It's never happened before.
I think there was one, someone pointed out, it's you've never had five, but there have been four because Oklahoma.
Okay.
I think Oklahoma has four technically because you had.
So that's where I was going to go with this, is actually is not so much, because some of them didn't graduate, but when you look at Oklahoma's run of quarterbacks from 2015 to 2023, they're all in the NFL, and most of them were pretty good. You've got Baker Mayfield first, followed by Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts, Spencer Rattler, Williams, and Dylan Gabriel. People forget that he was there between Central Florida and Oregon.
So Oklahoma is technically going to set that record with Dylan Gabriel, because you have Dylan Gabriel, Spencer Rattler that are both starting. Kyler Baker and Hurts.
Yeah, and even Caleb, right? Yeah. He's going to start too. Caleb, so that's six.
This will be a record for one school. Now it's a little different now because we're living in a world where a lot of these guys play at multiple schools.
Or didn't finish there.
Williams didn't finish there. Jalen Hurts didn't start there. Baker didn't start there. Rattler was only there for a year before he transferred.
Gabriel obviously didn't finish there.
So you will certainly see some of this. I think you will see more of this because guys play for so many different teams. Yeah. But Oklahoma is on the verge of having six starting quarterbacks in the NFL this week.
Pretty wild. And
Oregon damn near had four if Mariota was playing, but it sounds like Jaden Daniels is going to go.
And did Caleb win the Heisman? He did, didn't he?
He did, but he didn't win it at Oklahoma.
No. But I'm just saying, of those six, three of them are Heisman winners too, because you got Baker, Kyler, and Caleb.
Which is the weird thing about Lincoln Riley is, and I guess their offenses have been good at USC, but I mean, dude, he was the bee's knees for a while. Yeah. Like he was the coach, and NFL and all that stuff, and. And we'll see what happens with USC. I think they have a big one. This stretch of schedule, they need to figure some stuff out and prove that, that Illinois loss is just a tough loss on the road. But if he has a rocky year and this thing kind of craters, there's going to be some anger at Lincoln Riley. That has not gone the way I thought it was going to go. I thought Lincoln Riley to USC was really going to stoke the Oregon-USC rivalry.
Yeah.
I was like, we actually have another West Coast school.
I think it made Oregon fans a little bit scared for a second.
It should have. And Lincoln Riley just hasn't lived up to it. I mean, Washington's been a bigger threat than Lincoln Riley. And now we'll see what happens to Jed Fish and all that. But, I mean, we have not had a real West Coast team challenge Oregon in a while. And I thought that Lincoln Riley at USC would be that. And it has not.
So I wasn't necessarily planning on going down this road. But now that you brought it up, I'm curious. What do you make of USC this year? They're 4-1. They just lost a really close game to Illinois, who was ranked. They haven't really played anybody. Missouri State, Georgia Southern, Purdue, and Michigan State. But they've handled them all. Like, are they?
Do you think they're
going to take a step this year?
I was a believer in USC, and that when Deanton Lynn came in and took over their defense, and I guess Lincoln Riley kind of went hands off in the defense. Said he even changed the way they practiced. Mm-hmm. He said, "What do you need to be good on the defensive side of the ball?" And then they got their NIL in order, and you saw that they were recruiting better. And I just eventually Lincoln Riley is going to figure out that offense. Like Lincoln Riley can coach. Like Lincoln Riley didn't forget how to coach offense.
And USC always gets dudes on offense.
Yes. So I really thought that USC was going to be, I didn't know if that was going to be a playoff team, but I thought USC was going to, I thought they were underrated this year. In fact, I said going into the year, if you give me the choice between Illinois, Indiana, and you give me Washington and USC, I said, give me Washington and USC.
Yeah.
I think Washington's going to be a solid team. I think they'll be better than Illinois, and I think USC will be better than Indiana. And we'll still see what happens. I mean, it's early on.
Well, we're going to find out a lot in the next 3 weeks, because we mentioned they just lost a close one to Illinois at Illinois, 34-32 the final.
And now there's a bye.
And then they have a bye, but then they have Michigan at home.
Notre Dame.
Good. At Notre Dame, good. And even at Nebraska, who's starting to figure it out a little bit. So the next month is going to tell us a lot about them.
And so USC, if you beat Michigan and Notre Dame, everything you want is still in front of you.
Yep.
Because Nebraska, Northwestern, Iowa, those should be games that you win. And then UCLA's at the end of the year, again, you should win. That leaves that Oregon game potentially, again, being even if you stub your toe against Michigan or Notre Dame or somewhere along the line.
And Notre Dame wouldn't even be a conference loss.
No. You still have the potential to that Oregon game be a massive game.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that you lost at Illinois on the road. It's the way you lost. Mm-hmm. They couldn't stop a nosebleed. And even though that thing is 32-34, the only reason that game wasn't a two-touchdown win for Illinois, Illinois fumbled twice going into the end zone, literally like at the five-yard line. One of them was going into the end zone, and one of those, by the way, I didn't think was a fumble. So, like, they couldn't – and when they went down and scored, they were on about the 16-yard line with like a minute 50 to go. And they threw the ball basically into the end zone, and I was like, dude, that's a giant mistake. They had to they have to bleed clock. The moment Illinois got the ball back, only needing a field goal with timeouts and a minute whatever and change, I'm like, this game is over.
Yeah.
Illinois put up 502 yards. I thought USC's defense was going to be better than that. Mm-hmm. And if this is the USC team, if this is indicative of who they are,
if they're giving up 34 to Illinois, they're going to be giving up 40 plus to Michigan, Notre Dame.
Yeah, then this is the same old, same old.
Yeah.
And USC will be good because their offense is good and they will score points. But I that's why I thought last week the USC loss was one of the more disappointing losses. Not that they lost, the way they lost.
Yeah.
And that was vintage USC. Look good on offense, couldn't stop a nosebleed. Mm-hmm. And just the lack of toughness and the lack of physicality at the line I thought was alarming. So I won't write anyone off, but I have big concerns.
Tough time seeing it.
I have a tough time seeing it. Yeah. Especially a team like Indiana that manhandled Illinois. I mean, manhandled them. And I know Illinois is a good team and there's pride and you can't do the, you know, every week they're expecting them to do that. But you shouldn't have been beaten up at the point of attack by Illinois if you're USC.
Yeah. Well, we will get to the NFL slate coming up next. An interesting quarterback battle. Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, former teammates squaring off in Seattle. Got a little audio from Baker on what those glory days back in Carolina meant to him. Also, I've got a couple interesting statistical nuggets. One that'll floor you, one that won't, but is just as ugly. We'll get to that coming up next, primetime on 105.1 The Fan.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland. You know, think of the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Primetime, Buck, Sook, and Schultzy. I was getting my, I was about to call you Shook and Sultzy. That wasn't going to work.
The old Shook Show.
The old Aisha and Shook.
Aisha and Shook on the rock.
The Sean Connery version of Primetime with Aisha and Shook. Watching the Niners get started here on a 1st and 20. They picked up about 40 with the former Portland area prep star Kendrick Bourne, who... The Niners' wide receiver position is such a disaster. I think they went into the year missing four of their top five guys. Ayuk still hurt. Now Pearsall and Juwan Jennings are out, so you got 1, 2, and 3 all out. 2 weeks ago, they had to sign Kendrick Bourne to the practice squad, and now he's on the active roster, and he's making plays. But the 49ers threatening here early. I don't see how they hang in this game. We're just a much deeper, healthier Rams team right now. But I mean, so this would be a masterclass by Kyle Shanahan.
I'm looking here. So they've got what? DeMarcus Robinson, Kendrick Bourne, Malik Turner.
I don't know who that is.
Sky. Yeah. Like
tight end Jake Tonjes.
Hey, I love Tonjes. Old Tonjes. He's out there. Look, if they find a way to do this and they find a way to beat the Rams on a Thursday night, this will be the greatest Kyle Shanahan performance of all time.
Well, the
trends. Rams, the Rams defense is like a top five defense in the NFL, basically on every metric.
The trend's not in Shanahan's favor. I saw a stat yesterday that when he is an underdog of 6 points or more as the 49ers head coach, he is 1-19.
Yeah. They just scored, by the way.
They just put one in.
7-0 McCorkle Jones.
Look at that.
I think it's Shanahan, too. Like,
and it's Tonjes, your boy.
Is that Tonjes? Yeah. Tonjes out there making plays. Baby Billy. Great on script. And again, that's opening drive, script stuff.
Yeah, we'll see what happens midway through the second quarter
as it goes through. But this is why, like, backup quarterbacks, we mentioned yesterday, I think 51 quarterbacks have played already this year.
Yeah.
This is like, we live in a world now where, you know, the quarterback is more protected than ever, but we still end up with 60 plus starting quarterbacks every year. And having a guy, whatever you think of Mac Jones, having a competent quarterback that can play in a system. And this is the other reason why some people like the Shanahans of the world that run a very structured system. You look at like what Cincinnati's doing, you can't replicate what Joe Burrow does.
No.
they give him so much on his plate.
You need his arm talent. Yes. The way he reads defenses, fits into windows. That's not quite the same with Shanahan and the Niners.
Shanahan is more of a dude. I'm going to ask you to do A, B, or C, and I want you to do A, B, or C.
Yeah, this isn't you figure it out. This isn't you pick the read. I want it here. If you can't get it there, I want it there. If you can't get it there, then over here.
And, you know, when you get a guy that's competent like Mac Jones, and I know no one loves Mac Jones, but that is not an untalented guy.
Hey, that's Kyle Shanahan's guy.
Yeah, you can kind of ham and egg your way. We'll see that's what happens as this game goes along. But you can. He has done this over the years with, mm-hmm. I mean, you look with
Nick Mullins, he did it with CJ Beathard.
Yeah, they have found a way to kind of do, and they've done it with Garoppolo. They've mm-hmm. done it with
they did it with Purdy.
With Purdy, and I know like it's kind of gone on and elevated now with Brock Purdy. He's a much better quarterback than anyone gives him credit for. But there is something to the Shanahan system if you don't muck it up. So they're not going to beat the Rams, but
I wouldn't imagine so.
Do you guys think more people are watching Thursday night or Wild Card? Boston Red Sox v. New York Yankees, classic sports matchup.
I mean, I would bet that
you will be wrong. The NFL will double this number.
What about in New York and Boston?
Well, that'll be obviously. Well, that'll
but
be
everywhere bigger. Else, it'll be football, right?
Yeah. Dude, I will bet you this Amazon broadcast will double. And in fact, it may triple. Amazon, you know, and I know this isn't the sexiest matchup. Some of these Amazon games get monster numbers, and I know Red Sox Yankees in New York and Boston are going to get huge numbers, but from a national standpoint, dude, this ain't getting 10 million people that are watching this game. And I'll look up and see what game two did in this, but I will gladly tell you that I would take the bet that the NFL number will double this.
Well, we got an interesting one at Lumen Field this weekend between the Seahawks and the Bucks. Both teams 3-1. Both teams with a real shot to win their division if things go their way this season. You're getting a quarterback battle of guys that were former teammates in Carolina, Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield, who have both gone on to do bigger and better things with other franchises. But I thought this short clip was funny, so I had Schultzy pull it. One of the Tampa reporters at the facility was asking Baker about his relationship with Mac Jones because he knew that those guys are still pretty good friends, and he asked something along the lines of like what they talk about when they reminisce, and here's what that sounded like.
Reminisce about the good old days in Carolina. What are you talking about?
Reminisce about what days?
Good old days in Carolina.
Oh, nope. No, we don't.
Yeah, me and Sammy are tight, but we do not reminisce about those days. I have grown to really like Baker. He's kind of like the player version of Lane Kiffin. I just used to think he was kind of this, I don't know, like too full of himself, a little bit too hot-headed. And just as his career has gone on, I've grown to respect him and like him a lot more. I don't know if it's because he's matured or if we just aren't getting up in arms about him doing underwear ads with tigers on a leash or whatever, but I like Baker.
Well, one, he's taken his lumps.
Yeah.
And he's kind of resurrected himself. And I just think we appreciate, there's not many guys like him. In a world of very polished kind of Russell Wilson types, or the very quiet Jalen Hurt types, or the over-the-top obnoxious, if you will, superstar receiver. I'm trying to think if there's a quarterback that's kind of abrasive like that. Not necessarily one coming to mind. A Cam Newton, if you will.
Sure. I mean, some people have their issues with the way Rodgers handles these days.
Yeah, but he's pretty douchey. Baker kind of fits this. He kind of fits the old Brett Favre model without the sexual assault.
and grifting Mississippi public funds.
Yeah, there's a, I don't know, there's just an everyday, and one, he doesn't look that physically imposing.
He looks like an everyman.
And yet he's out there running around, kind of playing some of that freelance style.
A little backyard ball.
Yeah, so we love a cowboy, right? We love the John McClane, John Wayne.
Yeah, give me a gunslinger. America loves a gunslinger.
And there's an element of that and his style of play is fun. Because the Baker Mayfield experience is, it's a little chaotic and it's a little rocky. I mean, led the league in interceptions last year, but it'll also throw you 40 touchdowns and get you to the playoffs.
So then, specific to this matchup then, I mean, I think this is one of the better matchups of the weekend in the NFL. How do you see it as far as the challenges that Baker either provides for the Seahawks defense, which has been really damn good, and then on the flip side, I know that Tampa's been a little bit banged up and it feels like you can score on them, but, I mean, how do you see this matchup?
a lot of it to me will come down to the O-line health of Tampa, right? When, I mean, throughout much of this year, Tampa's been playing with four backup offensive linemen.
Is Wirf still out?
And that's what I need to see and take a look and see what their health is. I mean, their best offensive lineman was their center, and he was out playing left tackle.
Yep.
And so the Buccaneers can be a little feast or famine. Like, if you look at them, they were getting run out of the building against the Eagles, and in the second half, they came roaring back. You know, the three Buccaneer wins, the Falcons, Texans, and Jets, there's not a lot there that kind of gets you excited. Whereas now, Seahawks, Niners, Lions, this is going to give you a little more test. The Buccaneers are a good team, though. And, you know, no Mike Evans. So, yeah, it's a beat-up squad. I think Tampa, if they can actually get back and be healthy, I think Tampa Bay is a sneaky contender. Seattle is building a legit defense. I think they are, speaking of teams that haven't done anything, lost to the Niners, and then they've beaten the Steelers, Saints, and Cardinals. I mean, there's a little bit of this is kind of proof in the pudding for both squads. The only real two teams that either squad has played, they've lost. Mm-hmm. And both of them were close losses. Mm-hmm. They gacked one away against the Niners week one, and Tampa threw an interception at the end that could have changed the course of that game against Philadelphia. So I think this is a really, really fun matchup. And I think the two teams are fairly similar in that they're good, solid teams. You think they're playoff teams, but I don't know if you can trust either one to be a contender. But I think the injury problems that Tampa has, I think there's a little bit of, to me, where I lean towards Seattle here just because of the injury thing. I'm still not convinced that the Seattle O-line is worth a damn.
Yeah.
And I'm not convinced that when push comes to shove and Sam Darnold has to play in third and long situations, that he is going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Baker, I do think you have that trust. So yeah. In this game, I'll take Seattle. If you ask me which of these teams long-term this year I think is the more dangerous team, I think I would take Tampa Bay.
And of note, if you're reading the tea leaves, at least on social media, Tristan Wirfs posted to his Instagram story with a return of the Mac playing and a photo of him from practice. So no. If you're to believe his IG, it sounds like at least he thinks he's going to play, even though he's listed as questionable.
They just need to get some guys back healthy. And, you know, when Evans comes back, when Wirfs comes back, when they get some of the defensive bodies, Tampa will be there in that division. And I think Seattle will too. I think these teams are very, very similar. I think Tampa maybe is a little further along in their development. And honestly, I think we trust Baker a little more right now than we trust Sam Darnold, who has looked really good, but he's also he's been able to do it in the confines of a very nice system. I want to see what happens when someone really stuffs Seattle's run game and they're not getting special teams and defensive turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what we saw last year in Minnesota. Sam Darnold won 14 games last year. He won it with one of the best and most creative defenses in the NFL, and which is also why I think why Mike McDonald brought him in.
Yeah.
What's Mike McDonald's? Mike McDonald is literally trying to build the Minnesota Vikings.
Yes, he is.
That's what he's trying to do. And so you're like, well, they won 14 games with Sam Darnold. I don't think Seattle can win 14 games, but it's a very similar sort of situation. And so if you know, my question isn't that Seattle can beat average to bad teams. Can Seattle beat the better teams in the league? And so far, we don't know the answer to that. We just don't. And by the way, it's a very soft schedule. Jags, Texans, Commanders, Cardinals, there's the Rams, but Titans, Vikings, Falcons, Colts, Rams, Panthers, Niners.
Incredibly manageable.
This schedule is set up for the Seattle Seahawks to be an 11 or a 12-win team, go into the postseason, and then see what happens. And hopefully Sam Darnold doesn't revert to the Sam Darnold we saw against Detroit at the end of the year when the division was on the line, and then in the postseason.
Yeah, I'm looking at the head-to-head stats. By the way, Seattle is favored by 3.5 in this one.
Yeah.
Also, Sam Darnold, 905 passing yards on the season. Baker Mayfield, 904.
Yeah.
Just an odd oddity. And also, of note, maybe to Oregon fans, Bucky Irving questionable for this game. I guess he's dealing with a foot injury or ankle injury.
The Bucs have a little bit of the Niner thing going on.
A little bit.
Again, the last 2 weeks, they have played with four backup offensive linemen. And the one offensive lineman they did have, center, moved out to left guard. The fact that they are sitting there at 3-1 is that's a Niner-esque piece this crap together.
Yep.
Oh, and yeah, by the way, that Mike Evans guy, yeah, he's pretty good too.
And pretty important to what you do.
And Abuka has just been
great.
Amazing for them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is especially, and I don't know if this is just my perception. It feels like this year there's more MASH units than we've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, I just there just seems to be injury problems across the league, and you can't feel bad because it's just the NFL is a war of attrition. And I honestly think like half of being a playoff team and being a Super Bowl contender
is being healthy. Yep. No question.
It just is. When you get the Detroit Lions last year were the best team in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got to the postseason, and I want to say off the top of my head, it was like 16 defensive players.
Yeah, I think it was 22 players total, but 16 on the defensive side had all been on the IR.
You can't
make it to the end like that.
No, you get to the end, and what happened, and granted, there were some turnovers, and Goff got his head bounced off the turf against the Commanders, yeah. But you can't – I mean, they were bringing guys in off the street. Literally, at the end of the season, like I – if you're bringing in guys to play meaningful snaps at the end of the season,
you're in a bad spot.
And Detroit had to do that.
Saw a couple nuggets on a couple of AFC teams that people had high expectations for. And boy, those stats are very telling about where they are now. We'll get to those next, as well as which other games Suk is looking forward to in the NFL this weekend. We'll do that coming up next. But first, Schultzy has SportsCenter.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Prime Time. I did see one other little Seahawks nugget that probably doesn't result in anything, but former UW running back Miles Gaskin mm-hmm. has signed to their practice squad, and
okay.
he got drafted in 2019, spent some time with the Dolphins, then the Vikings, then the Rams, and he's mostly been a practice squad guy sure. the last 2 years between the Jaguars, Ravens.
He played a little bit down in Miami,
yeah,
I remember.
Did. Yep, he did. But he hasn't been playing much recently, but they just added him to the practice squad, and I guess they caught up with him at media availability, and he said that he got the call when he was back at home in Linwood. He's a Linwood native, mm-hmm. and he was burping his three-month-old baby girl, and he said, to be honest, I've been waiting for this call since I was a little kid. I've been waiting my whole life.
That's pretty cool.
So, you know, whether or not he ever has an impact, yeah. to get the call from your home team when you're a new dad that someone still wants you to play, pretty cool.
Well, and again, in this world of the running backs in Seattle, one, not the most healthy crew of all time, and Seattle wanting to run the ball 40 times, maybe you get a crack.
Yeah.
By the way, we looked it up. Game two of the Red Sox Yankees, 6.5 million people was the average
wow.
viewership. By
That's
the way,
actually pretty big.
Yeah, it was the largest. That was the I think they said the biggest wild card number in like four years or something. So mm-hmm. it was a big wild card number. And I'm assuming game three, elimination game, will do more than six
like
and a half.
Eight, maybe.
Yeah, let's say 7.5, eight, if you will. The Thursday night football so far this season is averaging 15.5. So,
yeah.
And by the way, that's on Amazon, a mm-hmm. subscription service.
You got to pay for it.
So, like old people don't know how to work.
It just goes to show you there is nothing in this country that can sniff the National Football League.
I mean, they could even put this on ABC.
It's a freight train without brakes.
It is. Nothing.
Wouldn't help.
And by the way, the Niners offense right now
look pretty good.
Really
McCorkle!
They are just
rolling.
They are. They easy touchdown on the first drive, and now in the second drive, they're rolling like inside the 20 now.
Mac is 9 of 10. That's insane.
They're just cruising down the field. This is going to be like that year that the Mariners just kept losing guys. Just get rid of all your talent and you just keep winning games. That's the key, is just get rid of all your receivers, get rid of your quarterback, and you're fine. Yeah, they're at the 25 now.
We were talking earlier in the week about some of the AFC teams that have already fallen short of expectations. Obviously, you have the Chiefs, who kind of got right last week against the Ravens. The Ravens, who are really struggling. Also, obviously, the Bengals, who are now without Joe Burrow. And I saw a couple stats that really stood out to me. One of them, because we were talking about how the Ravens, in theory, could still get back in this race just
sure.
based on what their schedule is ahead. Yeah. But there's one thing that, after hearing the stat, I think clearly has to change, and it was kind of stunning to me. So they run the ball.
Yeah, I saw this one.
You saw this? So
it's alarming.
On first and second down, yep. they run the ball at a 6.0 yards per carry clip with Derrick Henry. Second best in the league.
It is second best in the league on early down runs, first and second down.
And yet, The rate at which they choose to run the ball on first and second down, dead last in the league at 32%. What's happening there?
I don't know. There is a weird thing. The Ravens are also the squad. Remember in the playoff game?
The Chiefs game, yes. That's what I was going to go back to, absolutely.
I will never understand in that Chiefs loss, that was the number one rushing offense in the NFL, and I think in the second half they ran it. And by the way, that was like a one-score game. Mm-hmm. They ran it to their backs like four times
yeah.
in the entire season. It was the most perplexing game plan I've ever seen. And Todd Monken is a really good OC.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is.
Is it like outsmarting yourself? Like you think because we're so good at the run, people are going to load up and I have to zig when they zag? Like I don't get it.
I don't know. And then I had the idea of maybe they're running into, maybe on first and second down, teams are stacking boxes. But if they're stacking boxes, why are you running it at six and a half yards a carry? Or are you not running it because you are seeing loaded boxes? And then
when you do
see a light box, when you only see six or seven in there, is that when you're running? And that way you're having success. So sometimes I always try to be careful.
Deeper statistics might tell a different story.
Exactly. But it does appear to be alarming that happens. And the Ravens do have a tendency at times to get too cute. And I think it's one of the things that kills them in big playoff games. And to have a guy like Derrick Henry and then not use him.
Yeah.
Because when you get into these situations, he is not an every down back. He is not a guy that's in there on third down. He's not a guy that you can have when you're trailing. He needs to be a guy that you're feeding, and he gets better as the game goes along. He's the body blow guy.
Mm-hmm.
He is the definition of 1,000 cuts.
Yep.
And maybe this is an idea of you just trying to play hero ball with Lamar, and you know maybe the fumbles have something to do with it. You feel like you can't trust him. But you would think that these first and second down runs would be happening early on in games. And then also, too, the Ravens haven't had a lot of leads. And that's also where you would expect them to be
running the ball
is to close out games. And they've been in some nail biters or playing from behind. So I would need to have a deeper dive. But Dan Orlovsky was the one that had that.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly was one of those that got my attention where I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. It at least deserves some attention, if not some explanation, and maybe there's a good one, but for them to get things right, and I do think they're a team that could get it right, given the schedule that's ahead of them, but that probably has to change.
It is a very, it's a very manageable schedule, and it's a division that no one should run away with, but you're right, like, you need to figure out what you are from an offensive standpoint, but more importantly, you got to figure, I mean, it's one of the worst defenses in the NFL right now,
mm-hmm.
And I know not everyone's on IR, but you have three defensive linemen that are on IR, including your best one, who's a true difference maker. And you finished that game last week with seven defensive players out, and that ain't good. And then this goes back to the MASH unit. If you're not an elite defense to begin with, and Roquan Smith feels like he's lost a step, and then you lose your best defensive player along your defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
And then like Marlon Humphrey doesn't look like he used to.
And now it sounds like Kyle Hamilton's banged up too.
Yeah, he's banged up. You add him to the report. And so you throw some injuries on top of, you know, maybe some decline with some of the older players, and then maybe an identity crisis there. Look, we all thought Baltimore was a Super Bowl team.
Yeah. Loaded for a run for sure.
And right now, I mean, I think this could still be a playoff team, but dude, they do not look like a Super Bowl team. Though, to be fair, a couple of their losses are razor thin to good teams. We talked about the Seahawks are 3-1 and the 49ers are 3-1. But you look at who those two teams have played. And if we look at who Baltimore has played, I got to pull it up here. But I know Buffalo, where did the Ravens go?
There you
go.
And they play Cleveland?
Yeah. So they've lost Buffalo by one. They lost to the Lions by 8. And by the way, that was a razor-thin game.
Yeah,
remember? And
then that game was much closer.
That game was much closer. And then they got blown out by the Chiefs in that sort of abortion, and then they beat the Cleveland Browns. But I ask you, if Seattle or San Francisco had played Buffalo, Detroit, Kansas City, and Cleveland, aren't they 1-3? Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of teams right now that are sitting at 3-1 or 2-2. If they played the Ravens' schedule, they would be 1-3 as well. And the Ravens, the Lions game ended up getting broken open, but that was the fumble. They could have easily, that Buffalo game was the definition of a coin flip. And if they're 2-2, are we ringing the panic bell? And then you got the Texans, Rams, Bears, Dolphins, Vikings, Browns, Jets, Bengals, Steelers. There's wins that are coming. It's just that the 1-3 number is like, whoa. So I'm not ready to write them off by any stretch of the imagination, but that's an offensive number that's troubling. And depending on what defensive metric you're looking at, dude, this is a bottom 2 or 3 defense in the NFL. That's got to change.
Yeah.
And it should change because I'm telling you, if the Houston Texans look like a competent offense, you've got, then you're up S Creek. Because the Texans' offense is an abomination. Mm-hmm. And I mean that. An abomination.
And now you got CJ Stroud saying he feels like he's lost a step. He said he was looking back at his high school highlights and doesn't feel like he's athletic as he used to be. That's kind of a yikes for a guy who's in his third year.
They have done a disservice to CJ Stroud, who came into this league and immediately made an impact. And multiple coordinators, no offensive line help, no game plan, battle line coaching. There is a real issue there where they are on the verge. And now you're talking about him losing athleticism and possibly losing confidence. It just goes to show you, man, bad organizations that don't protect their quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. This is happening. It's why I said, if I'm Joe Burrow, I would force my way out of Cincinnati. It's not going to happen, but the best thing Joe Burrow could do for his career is pull a Carson Palmer and said, I will sit out. I am not doing this.
Yeah.
I am not going to spend my career that's already been injury riddled playing behind this. And by the way, CJ Stroud might be wise to do the same thing because they're bad organizations. They just are.
Yeah. 49ers just scored again, 14-0 now in Los Angeles on the road. We'll see if Kyle Shanahan can hold this together. Coming up, we'll get back to
the
Niners.
What the hell?
I got one more stat from you and a potentially interesting handicap for the weekend ahead. We love to talk sports betting. We'll do that next. Primetime, 105.1 The Fan. One more segment till we get to the club. I do this sometimes when I'm sitting in with Sook. I've got a bit of a choose-your-own-adventure for him, a number of news stories
up. I like a little Hardy Boys adventure.
And we also have to get back to one item that we didn't get to yesterday, the Ghost Pepper Mile, or Carolina Reaper Pepper Mile. I don't think we got to that. I'd like to hear about that.
I want you to take on more racing challenges is what I want.
You know what? I think I will. I almost did one in August, and then I was glad I didn't because it ended up being like 100 degrees.
A lot of big talk out of you, Buck.
A lot of almost.
Rob called it. When you did your sprint tri-clive.
I will be doing another one.
And that's what you said, and Rob was like, no chance. It's a one and done. And I would like to point out, since then, what have you done?
I've been running.
Really?
Yeah.
When was the last time you ran?
Last week.
Yeah.
Not this week.
Yeah.
Also, my gym that had a pool closed, so I've not been swimming either.
Interesting.
need to change that.
Second triathlon is right around the corner, buddy.
Any day. One more stat that stood out to me. We talked about how the Ravens might be able to right the ship and get things back on track.
Yeah.
The Bengals, maybe not so much.
No.
Their abilities without Joe Burrow, it was even with Joe Burrow, there were a lot of question marks, a lot of holes on the defense, issues with the offensive line. And then I saw a stat today that said, no, there really, really is no hope. They're the only team in the NFL whose punter has amassed more yardage than their entire offense. Every other team in the NFL has more total yards than punting yards.
Oh my!
Not the Bengals.
No, they're just cooked. And I mean, they just quit. I mean, last week,
Jamar Chase said it.
They just quit. I mean, they just got. I mean, that was an old fashioned beatdown that Minnesota put on them, 48-10. The Broncos 28-3. What are the Lions going to do to them? And we mentioned schedule, like with the Ravens. Dude, they got the Lions and the Packers these next 2 weeks. And I know that division is doesn't look like it has like a runaway freight train in it, but look, when your quarterback goes down this early in the season, you're not bouncing back. Maybe if you have an elite squad like Philadelphia, right? Yeah. If God forbid something happened to Jalen Hurts, you know, Tanner McKee, you would keep that thing afloat. I don't think they're winning a Super Bowl.
No, but you could still beat teams. You could still get to the Super Bowl. You could still maybe hope for some magic.
That's a playoff team.
Yes.
It is. Cincinnati is not. Cincinnati was a one-trick pony.
Mm-hmm.
It's a poorly run organization that doesn't spend wisely in the cap. They're not creative. And basically, even with Joe Burrow, they said that we can win one way and one way only, and that's just try to outscore people. Their defense is a sieve. And now the fact that Jake Browning's in there, and Jake Browning's fine.
Yeah.
Like this idea that you're trading for Jameis Winston. Okay, Jameis Winston behind
that
offensive line.
He's not going to do any more for you than Jake Browning.
No, Jake Browning's been there. He understands it. And when they had a somewhat decent system around him and a decent O-line, Browning was fine. He played decent ball a couple years ago, but this version, what they have, dude, they're going nowhere.
Speaking of going nowhere, the Rams just fumbled it away to the Niners, who are going to have the ball with a chance to go up 21-0.
How many people in Survivor picks went with,
I have two Survivor picks. One of them's the Lions this week. The other is the Rams. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Rams have looked like a Super Bowl team, and the Niners have nobody.
Yeah.
And it's a short week.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday night football on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my God, this is... This is why the NFL is king. You just never freaking know. And by the way, how much you want to bet this still ends up being a one possession game?
Probably.
With 5 minutes to play.
Yeah, I think that's entirely possible. The one betting handicap that I'll be looking at closely this weekend involves the Cincinnati Bengals. I got this from my buddy who I frequently bounce betting thoughts off of. He's the one who said he thought he'd found an edge in the WNBA, so I take what he says seriously.
Yeah.
he said that he is looking at David Montgomery props for Detroit this weekend, and here's the reason why.
Okay.
He's from Cincinnati and sure. has never played there. Not once in his NFL career has played there. He's got hundreds of friends and family showing up. His sister was in a car accident last year that paralyzed her, and she will be at the game as well.
Oh, geez.
The thought being, Dan Campbell lets him show out in front of his family and friends, bet on David Montgomery for at least a touchdown.
Oh, my God. That's tasty. By the way, Mason, the Vikings running back, he averaged 7 yards a carry and had two touchdowns
mm-hmm.
against this Cincinnati defense.
Mm-hmm.
So, boy,
if you like a narrative-based play, and I frequently do, it has nothing to do with the analytics, just to give the hometown guy a crack in front of all of his friends and family, first chance he's had to do it, I like it.
Dobbins averaged 6.5 yards a carry against him. Harvey, their backup. Yeah, the Broncos ran for damn near 200 yards and 5.5 yards
a carry. And with Gibbs and Montgomery, they should be able to do whatever they want.
Yeah. Let's ride this together.
Let's
do some David Montgomery props. Sonic and Knuckles, baby.
All right. Yeah, and his over-under for yardage is like 50. He can get that.
Let's go.
Maybe parlay them together if you're feeling frisky.
Also on a...
Not financial advice.
No, but I'm going to do it anyways. The other fun nugget that I saw in the world of college football, someone tweeted this out. I think it might have been Josh Pate.
Uh-huh.
Texas and Florida play
uh-huh.
this weekend.
Yep.
Texas is the 103rd ranked third down offense, and Florida's the 123rd ranked offense.
Jeez.
If you ever wanted to watch Iowa play Iowa, I give you Texas v. Florida. And if you want to know narratives mean nothing, think about the way we talked about Lagway and Arch Manning coming into this season.
I already kind of liked the under in that game just because we haven't seen Arch do it yet. It's in the swamp. And frankly, the way Lagway has been performing, it doesn't seem like they've been putting a lot of points on the board, turning the ball over and whatnot. That seems ripe for the under. So I'll be staring that one down as well. The other spot, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. I don't know that Maryland's going to win, but I really like them catching almost a touchdown against UW after UW emptied the tank against Ohio State at home, now has to go across the country to Maryland.
Undefeated with a freshman quarterback that looks pretty good.
For whatever, you can say what you want about people's opponents this early in the season, but at least for what they've had in front of them, Maryland has handled all tests. And so having the game at home, they'll be ready for this one. And, I don't know that they're going to beat Washington, but I think catching all those points from Maryland could be tasty too.
The Buck just spilling out. It's his final show host.
That's right.
Like, I got my notes.
Victory lap. Those are Bucks handicaps for the day. Not financial advice, but the club is coming up next, where we will do a choose your own adventure, the Carolina Reaper Mile, and also going to add to that the Taco Bell Marathon that I saw today. Well, that's all coming up in the club on The Fan.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.